It's 3:50 a.m. in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, and you're listening to Night Call.
Hello and welcome to another Night Call. My name is Emily Yoshida. I am in New York, and with me on the other line and on the other coast, I have
Tess Lynch
and Molly Lambert.
And give us a call. Give us your night call at 240-46-NIGHT. Share your thoughts, your feelings, any questions you may have for us on these strange days and lonely nights. You can also send us an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. And yeah, tell us what's on your mind. So what's on your guys' mind tonight? I feel like it's been a while since we last spoke, because it actually has been, even though the pods keep a-coming. But
my head is like a balloon today.
Hey,
that
mine
is like
too.
Floating away from my body.
And why could that be, Molly?
Because I went to Las Vegas with Emily.
Woo!
Yeah, we spent some good time in Las Vegas. I would say it's a pretty successful trip.
It was very successful in that I was so ready to get out of Las Vegas on day three. I was like, I need to escape. And then by the time I was on the plane, I was already like, what a great trip.
That's
that
good.
Was fun.
If you can have nostalgia for the thing during the thing. We went, I guess we got there. It wasn't even quite a weekend, but it felt like a mob scene.
Yeah. We got there on Thursday. We thought, Okay, so here's what we thought. We thought we were picking like a dead weekend that nobody would be there, because it's like the middle of March and who's in Las Vegas? And we picked like
a Thursday.
You
can't even sit by the pool. Like, what's the point?
Yeah. We were like, it's the pre-summer rush. There's like no holidays. Turns out, it was St. Patrick's Day on Saturday.
Who among us could have ever known when St. Patrick's Day is? That's not on my calendar.
And B, it was March Madness weekend, which none of us even knew existed, because it's not like we worked at ESPN for several years.
No. And you haven't gone mad.
What's that? Known. I don't have ESPN.
We were so like, what is this? And then we were like, oh no.
All the dads in the world have convened in Las Vegas.
I have never seen so many men in my whole life.
Wait, so I want to, before we get into like the full rundown of the trip, I want to like, one of my early observations, because I got there a day early and I spent a night at the Palms, and this was just off strip, but like, if anybody watched any MTV reality show at any point in the 2000s, they know the Palms, because I feel like there was always like people partying at Ghost Bar or whatever. It was like the aughts hangout for the cast of The Hills and Paris Hilton and everybody. And now, I mean, they're in the middle of this huge overhaul, so it's sort of sad. It's been all ripped up. But now it just kind of feels, it's halfway there to its remodeling, but it's also now just an aughts themed casino. Like,
yeah, you were sending these like really sad pictures of like Dave Navarro.
Yeah.
Just like, you were saying it's like they're halfway through trying to turn it over from being the 2000s place, but they still have all the 2000s people in huge billboards on the walls.
Yeah, there's this walkway, the Sky Tube, to like their fancier hotel, Palms Place. And it's just these huge murals of like Alicia Keys and Dave Navarro and the cast of Entourage and stuff. And it's just
That's
like
such a weird Motley Crue.
It's so strange.
Such a bad thing.
And like, yeah. And then like Nelly, I think, is in there in the mix.
Love
too.
Nelly.
It's just, it's very evocative. I mean, I had like a very memorable experience at the Palms in like 2010, probably at the very last year that it was like super the spot to be. And I was a little sad to see it all ripped up and unrecognizable, because I had some good times at the Palms in my day, but it's a theme hotel of its own now.
Yeah, it's the theme is death and resurrection.
Oh, the other thing is that Adrienne Maloof, I don't think owns, or her family doesn't have any ownership over it anymore. Like the Maloof name is no longer on it.
Oh, really?
I don't think. I think they got bought by like the people who own the station, the Palace Station, I think, or Sunset Station. I can't remember. Anyway, I know too much about Vegas casinos.
Well, one thing about Vegas casinos is don't ever get attached to anything about any of them. No. Because that is their reality.
Wouldn't that be so sad if you made a habit of getting attached to Vegas casinos?
Yeah, here's what I keep saying is like a really smart person, if they were going to open another casino, if they want to make a night call casino in old Las Vegas, because like the best casinos are the ones that are still feel a little old and weird to me, and that's why I like the old strip with like the Fremont Street casinos, because they are a little like older and sleazier and own it. Whereas the new ones are like new and sleazy and have like are so characterless in the same way.
They have like a forced character, like cosmopolitan. Like,
but if they didn't blow everything up all the time and they had let some of the 60s stuff exist long enough to still exist, it would be so popular now.
It's you know? True. Retro casino.
Right. Like if there was like a Sands, like a, you know, rebuild the original Sands and make like a Rat Pack themed casino, people would fucking love that. Especially as like the next phase now that like the EDM phase of Las Vegas is maybe on its way out, I guess.
Oh, I think
it's,
it is.
It's peaked.
I think this is maybe a separate discussion for another day, but I think there were certainly in the twilight of the EDM, like the Vegas EDM thing. And I wish I could write something about this. This is like something I thought was happening 4 years ago, but it's just taken longer.
Emily and I both also had only been to Las Vegas most recently on work trips, which are a great way to go to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And we both realized that that is why Hunter S. Thompson went there for Fear and Loathing, is because it's like the place you can scam people into letting you go.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but so, also, we both were like, should we be taking notes? And then we were like, no, we're just here.
Oh, we're just here for fun. I was so sad to miss this trip. My husband had work. And we have no babysitter, which is fun to have no babysitter and just be looking at Instagram. But it was, you guys did a good job of capturing
it. We missed
it.
You very much, especially at Magic Mike.
Oh, my God.
We will get to.
Yeah.
So, well, we met up at the Venetian, which is where this all took place, which I had also never been to before, which is a great, silly Las Vegas hotel with fake canals.
It was very like floral looking. Or was that somewhere else that you guys went?
That was the Wynn.
Oh, that was the Wynn. The Wynn is like Rose Parade
themed.
It's
so pretty.
Also, the Wynn is, we should like do the disclaimer that all of these places are owned by the most evil men. And that's just a fact of going to Vegas. It's like you're going to eat the burger and it's going to have like hooves in it.
Although the Wynn, even though Steve Wynn is very evil, he's also a vegan. He's an evil vegan.
Oh, so the burger isn't the most apt.
They have like lots of vegan options, and we actually went there on St. Patrick's Day
because
it was like they were like, my friends that were left were like, this one might have vegetarian options.
Only the vegans remain at the end of the trip.
Well, I thought that was interesting too, the evil vegans, because it's become such a trope, the like the evil billionaires and evil tech guys that are into like health and wellness and like fake into Eastern religion, you know, but are evil and
Did you guys see that article about this is totally separate, but Powder Mountain?
No, is
it's
that
like an one elite of the club for like millennials who are trying to have spiritual awakenings? It's like a place to do mushrooms with billionaires. It sounds awful. It's like in Utah somewhere. You should go seek
that sounds
it out.
Like my nightmare. I heard that the tech yuppies have taken over Esalen, which is not super surprising.
That's a part of that story too. So we should
Let's get back to last. Speaking of journeys to the inside of the self.
Well, okay. So we mentioned that we went there during March Madness, and it was just this complete and total like.
When did you realize it was March Madness?
When I got on the plane to go to Vegas, and it was all dudes. And I texted David, and I was like, "I've made a horrible mistake." I didn't even realize. Like, I remember when we booked it, and somebody was like, "Oh, you know, it's going to be a busy weekend." And I was like, oh, haha, like, you know, aren't they all? But no, this was on a different level entirely. So everywhere we went, it was packed with dudes everywhere.
It was like, I can't even describe it because I've never been in that experience. I kept saying it was like we were in a zombie movie where all the women had been killed and we were the only women left. So like every time we did see a woman, we would be like, hello.
And so this was, you know, we haven't mentioned this is my bachelorette party. And so this being a special occasion, I really wanted to work some looks, or as you may pronounce them, lukes. during the weekend. And the first second that Molly and I stepped out to go to Walgreens to get something, it's like just a bunch of guys being like, huh, interesting outfits, ladies. And I was like, cool, I'm going to go back and I'm going to change into something even weirder.
Yeah, we kind of decided against our like hot outfits in favor of our like scary outfits. Yeah. Because the first time we went out in our hot outfits, the men who like hit on you that are super normie and are like, weird, what's up, weirdos? Like,
but yeah, so
oh, do you like books? No. Like, what?
No, but we had been kind of dealing with this, like guys who are just so in their zone that they, you know, don't even hold open the elevator door for women. Like,
we didn't exist to them. Every time we were in an elevator, they were having like an impassionate, you know, like, did you see that play? Like, yeah. But like really loud, like over us if we wanted to have a conversation, which we weren't even trying to, but just like,
it was,
I don't
just
know.
We were completely invisible to them. It was
when,
like,
you said that they were saying, did you see that play? My first thought was like, wow, like theater nerd. No, see, that's how divorced from March Madness.
No, we were so divorced from it. It was hilarious. Yeah. We were like, we didn't think about it at all. And then I didn't even know that it was like a thing in Las Vegas, even though of course it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like the guys aren't even there to like party and get laid. They're literally just there to bet. That's all they care about.
They probably, I mean, there's probably plenty of.
Well, they wear their like daytime visor to the casino, and then they have their nighttime visor.
Their sex visor.
For the club. We wore visors the whole time.
I thought.
But yeah, then we went to the club. We went to Hakkasan, which is the super, super club, the like three-story super
like
club.
It's enormous.
You have to take an elevator like in the Haunted Mansion to get in.
Yeah.
And Emily and I both enjoy those sorts of things.
Oh,
we enjoy EDM spectacle.
And I had always wanted to go there out of just like sheer kind of morbid fascination with like
the biggest club in Vegas. Well, the last time I went to Vegas was I was profiling Martin Garrix, superstar DJ Martin Garrix for MTV, and we got to go to like a super club through like the back door entrance, the Goodfellas entrance, and it was like the best experience of my life. Nice. I was just like, can't be jaded about this. This is pretty cool. Although I'm sure it gets old if you're like doing it every night
every
if you're one
night.
Of those DJs.
Yeah.
But Hakkasan was like, oh, it was just like walking into a room of like testosterone poisoning.
Yeah.
It was like everyone was just hitting on like any woman in sight. I like felt bad for any woman who was there because it was just like that kind of getting hit on where it has just so, it's so indiscriminate. It's just like you. Okay. No, you.
Yeah. Well, I always try to just be like, hey, everybody in our group is spoken for. And then somebody will make fun of me for using the turn of phrase spoken for. It's just like, there's no way to have a like gracefully.
Okay, Niles.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. We are all spoken for here.
Well, that was funny too, because there was nobody who was single, but everybody came out of it like, man, I'm so glad I'm not single. Cause like, what a nightmare.
But so on our last night, we went to maybe the polar op. We had like the best palate cleanser.
Yeah, we counter-programmed. Well, first we went to the National Atomic Testing Museum.
Well, there was that. So we meditated
on
death
for one
and
second.
Radiation and
everything. We looked at a lot of, that is a great museum that I recommend to everybody, the National Atomic Testing Museum. It is really scary. And the first time I went, it was before the election.
Mm.
So I had such a different experience of it because I was just like, wow, the 20th century was so scary, you know?
Good thing we're existing now.
I was like,
oh, wait.
Yeah, I was like, imagine living under the like terror of nuclear threat all the time. That must have been so scary. No wonder everything got so paranoid and weird.
Yeah.
And then this time it was even weirder because it's a Smithsonian Museum, but the way the captions work, it's like, and then we made the bomb because we had to because of the Russian arms race. And
it
then
it protects democracy.
Yeah. Like, and then
somebody's
like,
got to have it.
They like don't go into Hiroshima and Nagasaki at all in terms of like what happened after you did that.
Yeah.
It's just like, here's what, you know, then we made this bomb and then we made this bomb.
Wasn't it?
And then at the end, it's like, and then we won the Cold War.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I think it was Dilcia who was saying that who had been to the museum in Hiroshima about the bomb there. And it's also equally like kind of gliding over the fact that there was even a war before the bomb was off. It's like, you know, you get the selective story no matter where you are. If you're in a museum that covers any kind of war or conflict whatsoever.
Yeah, it definitely was a national museum.
Yeah. There's also like an incredible movie that I don't, Molly, you weren't in there with us, but I'm sure you saw when you were there before, where it starts with a bomb countdown and then they like fill the theater with smoke and like it and like jets of air blast at you. And
no!
And we were, our nerves were so frayed because it had been like a very long night before.
It's also called the Ground Zero Theater.
Yes.
Oh,
it's
no!
called the Ground Zero Theater. And like immediately my friend who was sitting next to me just like collapsed and cowered and like went into my arms because it was like too much, we can't do it. Yeah, it was a lot. But then we got to see the sad little collection of alien memorabilia, which was great.
The alien exhibit I saw when I first went was no longer up, but they had sort of like moved the remaining stuff into a sad corner, which was great. Because one of the things in the alien display was just a collection of vape juice that was called Area 51 vape juice.
And in like a glass case in a museum that has like the Smithsonian logo outside of it. There is a,
well, that's
a
what's
case
so
of
funny.
Vape juice.
They divide the like the real history stuff from the Area 51 stuff, but they know that people are super interested in that also.
Yeah.
So they a little bit cater to it. Because, I mean, it's
a spoonful of sugar to help the medicine go down.
It's
about
very
the atomic
interesting
war.
Just from a point of view, too, of like, you know, because it's in Las Vegas. It's outside Las Vegas because the Nevada test site is where they tested all these atomic bombs. So it's technically a museum about that. But it's, you know, they talk about like, oh, and here are the places they considered for testing the atomic bomb.
Yeah.
Like
where else?
New Mexico and Utah. And I think they picked like Nevada because there was like relatively nothing around it, and then Las Vegas was pissed at first because they were like, please don't test atomic bombs,
and then it was a hit, it was a huge tourist draw, everybody wanted to watch the bomb go off,
and then they pivoted to promoting it and being like, come get blown up in Las Vegas.
Which, you know, to be honest, that's still a draw.
Yeah, although now that I say that, I realize how tasteless it is because they just had a big mass shooting. So I think sometimes, I don't know, that's what's part of weird about the sort of erasing of history in Las Vegas is that it was interesting to be there and be like, oh, like there's some like Vegas Strong hashtags and stuff. But other than that, and there were some bomb sniffing dogs.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was very like business as usual. Don't think about it being scary here.
It's so funny to me that you guys love Las Vegas because I hate Las Vegas. I truly hate Las Vegas. And my uncle lived there for a long, long time, which maybe is all part of why I not know my uncle was great. But like, when you live in Las Vegas,
you had the experience of like the non-tourist.
Well, yeah. I mean, and also I had like, when you were talking about the guys going up and hitting on you and how awful they were, I was like, huh, maybe I was doing that back when I was in Vegas where you're just like anyone.
No, that's like part of
that's
par
the
for the
Vegas.
Course.
Oh, yeah, that's just
thing,
part of the experience.
I just felt bad for them. I wasn't like,
I know. But it's like that weird desperate. You
desperate the desperate energy. I enjoy observing that.
I won
psycho.
Some money in Las Vegas the like one time that I went there in recent memory because I have a rule that I can only ever gamble $20 no matter what I do.
I lost about 10.
I saw you with a voucher for 25 cents.
Yeah, but I spent $5 to make the 25 cents. So it was a net loss.
What's the best thing about Las Vegas?
Well, okay, I think Emily and I probably both like it because it's like, you know, a postmodern fantasy and we like to think about it.
Yeah.
And
I also just like any large machine. And when you're driving into Vegas and you see all the resorts and they're just colossal, like they're bigger than any building that you see in New York, just in terms of like the stat, like not in terms of height, but just in terms of like the mass of them.
Right.
It's just it's such an alien scale to be in. And then to think about like cities worth of people that just work there.
Right.
It's
so far out in the desert that it has a real like space colony feeling to it.
Yeah.
You're like, this is how we are thinking about like how we would colonize Mars, you know, because you're like, what do you need, and how can you make buildings that have every possible thing you could ever need in them so you never have to leave the building? But then you always get that Vegas casino space madness where you're like, I have to go outside.
Yeah. Where day is night and night is day. Yeah. And
I think that accounts for a lot of my wooziness now, is just being so outside of like any kind of natural time cycle or like day cycle. I don't know. It's so weird.
I felt like fine on St. Patrick's Day, which was also hilarious because we were like at the end of our trip and then everybody else was like just getting there for St. Patrick's Day on Saturday. You know, so it was like...
Well, you guys are also lucky that you missed the spring break crowd, or maybe not lucky if that
would be more fun. Yeah. That would have been better than this. This was like not...
There would have been more women there.
That was the thing. On St. Patrick's Day, I was immediately more comfortable because there were suddenly like packs of sorority girls, and I was like, oh, thank God. You know what I mean?
My sisters.
And also,
like, when else are you going to say, like, think that? But then you're after like...
Yeah, no, I was like, the bros can't exist like alone. The bros need to like rove amongst the packs of like lady bros, you know, and find each other when it was just bros and they were just like there to gamble and that's all it was. I don't know, that was dark, maybe too dark for me.
I think also another part of me being like drawn to Vegas from the first time I ever went there is like, it's so outside of anything that I would never have gone on a Vegas vacation when I was a kid. One, because we wouldn't have had the money, and two, because it's just like completely not aligned with any values I grew up with. So there is this sort of like forbidden fruit aspect of it, but like in a, not in a like, I'm going to go and I'm going to like shower myself in champagne and do all of the debaucherous things. I'm mostly just like, what is it? Like, well, show me all like, the crazy stuff that you can do here.
Beautiful lights. Yeah. We're like suckers for beautiful neon lights. I think there was that meme going around that was like about like how neon and fog is so tired, the Blade Runner like cyberpunk aesthetic, and then it was like also me like, ooh, neon. Like a foggy neon.
I do like the neon. I just feel like there's a certain element of like being trapped with the bad decisions you're gonna make in a big giant hotel that just feels like the twilight zone that I would least like to experience. But
the shinning?
Yeah, the shinning. Exactly.
I mean, I hated Las Vegas when I went there as a kid. I went there for the first time as a kid to see a Grateful Dead concert with my family during the Bob Weir and Jerry Garcia were wearing shorts a lot phase. And I hated Las Vegas because it was like 120 degrees.
Yeah.
I liked the Luxor because I was into ancient Egyptian art, but you know, I was like, I don't know, I hated it. I thought I just really hated Las Vegas. And then I went back for the first time as an adult, to AVN for Grantland, and that was the best experience of my life. And then I fell in love with Las Vegas.
Well,
I was going to say we should break and do a question and then do something just on Magic Mike, I think.
Yes.
Perfect. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Okay.
So we'll be back with the rest of our Vegas adventure
after a night call.
Let's take a night call. Who do we have on the old message recorder, on the old voicemail box? We have a call from Kevin.
Good evening, night call. My name is Kevin. I'm talking from Los Angeles. Big fan of the podcast so far. I had a question for all three of you. Wanted to get a sense of any experiences that you've had in terms of deep dives, looking for stuff online, anything that has sort of inadvertently become nightmare fuel. Sometimes I'll spend a lot of time just doing deep dives on YouTube, and then I'll come across some strange, odd video. Kind of watch half of it, freak out a little bit, and then I kind of meditate on it and then dig a little bit deeper looking for related content. I just wanted to know if there was anything in terms of what I described that you could identify in terms of your own internet or online deep dives. All right, have a good night. Bye.
Hey, Kevin, thank you so much for calling in. So I think we are all mega deep divers.
Uh-huh.
Is that right, you guys?
Uh-huh.
This is interesting to me. So you kind of accidentally stumbled on something that was really creepy, and then instead of closing the window, you were like, no.
Peer into the darkness.
I'm going in. The one that's kind of like terrible catnip for me. Well, there's two. And I think we'll probably have a whole episode devoted eventually to ghosts. One of them is ghost stories. But I am a I get very obsessed with medical mysteries. And so I tend to go like really, really deep on those. And that's a huge mistake that I don't think anyone should do. I signed up for this website called CrowdMed after trying to solve several acquaintances' medical mysteries by like obsessive Googling. I got a couple solved. So then CrowdMed is basically if you have something that doctors can't figure out, you post like an exhaustive account of your symptoms and you get an anonymous handle. And then anyone can kind of weigh in and try and solve it for you. And there's like a cash reward if they get it right, I guess. I'm not even sure how it works because I have not felt like an expert enough to actually diagnose someone. So I just look at their problems, try and diagnose them, and keep that information to myself. Which is a horrible thing to do.
Doctor Tess.
But it's been super, super interesting. So that's my deep dive nightmare fuel. And I feel like I already know what Molly's is, but I wonder if
what
she's going to say.
What do you think mine is?
I thought it was lotus breast.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, fear of holes.
Fear of holes.
We've definitely.
Something that comes up on our text thread a lot.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think like what a recent one is. Emily, what are yours?
Well, this one, I mean, I've been watching cyst videos since the beginning. Like, Ben just freaked out. it really has been since I was in college. There's a long story about what opened me to the world of cyst videos. But I haven't watched any for a really long time.
Cyst videos?
Yeah,
what?
Yeah. You don't know about this? This is like
now this is
legitimately a huge thing.
I've like learned a lot about you also on this trip, such as that you were a hair model.
Oh yeah.
Really?
Yes. Emily's secret history.
I can see it. She's got great hair.
Yeah, great hair.
Thank
she
you.
Was like, oh, I haven't been to Vegas since the hair show.
Oh no, I've been to Vegas since the
hair
show.
Like, I've been to Vegas since the hair show.
I hadn't been to the Venetian since the hair.
My first time in Vegas was for the hair show.
Oh, no, it was my second time but it was the first time I stayed at the Venetian. It was for Intercoiffure 2007. It was there with Vidal Sassoon. It was very fun. We did a routine to the Klaxons, if you want to date that. So,
oh man. Dave Navarro and all the palms, the palms fronds.
Yeah. Anyway, but okay. So there's that. I mean, those
you
are just
cyst videos. I can't fuck with that.
I
at
know.
All.
I can't.
Yeah,
do it.
I know. It's not for everybody. I don't want to get too much into it. I honestly haven't watched a lot. Last time I went to go see how the cyst scene on YouTube was going, it was like very. It was extremely like curated, like all things on YouTube now. Like there are doctors and dermatologists
far.
Who have. Channels
endorsements
yeah it's totally crazy. Like before it was always
like
just like
cyst beauty bloggers.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so weird.
Yeah, it's crazy. So like before it was just like, oh, my cousin has this thing on his back and we're gonna take him out back and rip it open. Like, I mean, there was
I like how Tess is horrified by that, but she's like, I like to Google medical mysteries.
Well, internal medicine, Molly. I'm an internist. I'm a fake internist, not a dermatologist.
But
I like to read about disappearances.
Oh, I had one other one that because that one, like, I don't know. That's not like a really a current thing. That's just
you're not
something.
Big on that anymore.
No,
that was just
the scene is dead, guys. but the one that I got into like a couple years ago is kids who, like, you know, these like evangelical kids who record their glossolalia. They do their speaking in tongues, like, and like, you know, a lot of the videos would be kind of long because they have to like wait for the spirit to take them over, and then they start,
right.
You know, doing their leaning and rocking and doing all the speaking in tongues and everything, and that can be very haunting and unsettling sometimes.
Do you ever get too creeped out?
Yeah, for sure. Like there are ones where it's like this kid is too young to be doing this on YouTube. Like it there's something very like.
I think we're all too young to
be doing
that.
Oh, you know
that,
what? I actually, Molly Soda, who is an internet person I really like, she's an artist. She was posting yesterday about how like tween girls will like put up videos on YouTube of like dances they made up. And then there are all these like mean comments from adult men being like, you're ugly. Like this dance sucks. Ugh. And she was just like, that should be like a safe place for people. Like girls should be have a phase where they get to like make up dances where they aren't like being critiqued by men about what they don't like about it. I was like, she's so right.
Yeah.
Terrible.
But also, like, we all did that stuff. I feel like we were, like, 80s video cameras. Like, we definitely,
I have
some of that stuff.
I have a tape of, I believe you're on it, Molly, that my parents sent. And I was like, ooh, what if anyone has seen this?
No.
Wait, can I tell you guys, because Molly, I think you mentioned, disappearances. Yes. I did a deep dive where I was trying to see if I could find this woman who's been missing for, gosh, I mean, it must be like more than a year. Her name is Nancy, and there's a website for her called Nancy is Missing, and she has a Facebook page. She has Alzheimer's, and she went missing from LACMA, and I decided to take it upon myself to try to find her. But in, like, because there's a huge homeless population, obviously, in LA, and I was like, I'm just going to keep an eye out. But then I also started looking through the databases of missing people in Los Angeles, and I was doing it so much that I just feel like I maybe wanted to find, like, I wanted it to happen. And so I thought I found a missing person who had gone missing near my house a long time ago, and I thought I found him living on the streets. And I sent my husband he was in a parking lot of a drugstore to go be like,
hey, we found you.
Yeah, to say his name just to see if he responded, but he did respond, but then was like, it's not me. But then they ended up having this long conversation my husband had a hard time extricating himself from, and he made me promise to never do that again. But I like went so deep on it because I was like, I think I could find like half these people. I've got a lot of time on my hands. Like,
you've been a detective a few times, actually.
And it's always worked out so well.
Gray Smith. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. You're such a Gray Smith.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you so much for the call. I like Kevin's attitude also about like just sticking with it and waiting for an epiphany to happen or meditating
or
on
that you go too deep and you get spooked, which can happen.
And then you meditate.
By the way, we've gotten so many good night calls and we're trying to work through all of them. It's going to take some time, but we've gotten a lot of very heartfelt questions and messages, and we love them. So please keep them coming.
And just because we don't play them doesn't mean we don't see them. We read them all. So know that we see you and hear you, and we
love your emails just as much.
Yes, and we're gonna get to more of them. We're going through slowly.
So back to Vegas, really quickly. So we mentioned it was a complete man fest the entire time we were there, and it was a little overwhelming. But on our last night, we had the palate cleanser of palate cleansers. We went to Magic Mike Live. Which is the live show they've had for about a year and a half now, I think, at the Hard Rock Hotel, produced by, I think Channing Tatum has like a producer role in it, but I could be mistaken. It's
they sell his vodka at the bar, so he's definitely
he's in it. His involved. He makes a voice cameo in it. But it is something I kind of had to be talked into at first.
You did totally have to be talked into it. You were more leaning towards the Baz Luhrmann Cirque du Soleil live show.
There is Baz Luhrmann like review, which is incredible. And I will go to that someday. But
I was totally I am such a bro because I was the person who was like, it's your bachelorette. We're just getting strippers. even though it's like, it's not like you're getting strippers. It's like you're going to a play.
No.
That has men dancing in it.
Well, the thing that's funny is that when I came back, David was watching Atlanta, and I don't remember what it's from the new season, but there was like a scene that was in a strip club, and I was just sort of like, it's so different from like strip reviews, like male strip reviews. Like it's more like an ambiance where like a strip, like for like a female stripper scenario.
It's like the musical cabaret. It's like
right, yeah. It's not an actual cabaret.
You're in like Weimar Germany.
Yeah,
you know, everyone's in the club.
Yeah.
Because we were sitting in a balcony, but they like came up to the balcony.
Right. So yeah, it's first of all, well, okay. So my I'll tell you my reservations were just that like I love both Magic Mike movies a lot. I think they are so fun and like very life affirming and great. I also had no interest in being one of the women in it. Like, even in those, like, really incredibly choreographed ones, like the mirror dance at the end of Magic Mike XXL, like, I don't want to be the person who's being thrown around on a chair, like, and, like,
or
being made to do
this. Or so you thought.
Yeah. We're being made to do the splits.
Right. You don't want to get called on stage at the magic show. You're not like a volunteer.
Well, I have been called on stage at a magic show. That's sort of fun.
Okay. Okay. You're a selective volunteer. Yeah,
but not where you might have to like spread eagle in front of a crowd or whatever. Like
again, or so you thought. I was really campaigning for the Magic Mike show also because like 3 out of the 5 people at this bachelorette party are film critics or film programmers. And so I thought it would be funny to go to a strip show based on a Steven Soderbergh movie.
Yeah.
And it was, but also to encourage like more Las Vegas reviews based on Steven Soderbergh movies.
What would be the next one? Like,
obviously there should be a Behind the Candelabra live show.
Oh my God.
Yes. I would 100% see that.
Yeah. You would be into that.
That would definitely bring me to Vegas if I could go too.
Oh my
okay.
God.
When we build the Night Call Casino, that's the 60s themed casino. That will be the in-house show is the Liberace Behind the Candelabra show.
Oh man.
It'll be amazing.
So, I don't know how much we want to spoil from the Magic Mike show because there are some like definite surprises. And this is the other thing that intrigued me about the show and kind of won me over is that on Yelp, people are like, the Magic Mike show is so amazing. I kind of don't want to go into too much detail here because I want to like preserve the experience for people who come to see it later. So maybe like, but there is like a total, there is a fake out moment in it that like is very rewarding.
Yeah, we were all faked out.
Yeah. But it has this incredible female MC, which I think is like the reason so much of it works. Much like in Magic Mike XXL with Jada Pinkett Smith. I mean, she's not really doing the same thing as Jada Pinkett Smith, but it's just like this like female, like this like dominating female energy in the room is like what makes so
like
much of it
having
feel fun.
Having been in March Madness for like the previous day, it was like the opposite.
Yeah.
It was like, she was like, here's a space that's just for you,
yeah.
ladies.
Yeah.
Nothing is about anything but like what you're interested in and like catering to your needs. And we were all like, ah.
The other great. Great thing about it is that so many of the, like when they have, you know, she does like little interactions with some of the guys and like they all just like act in the cutest, like, kind of dumb puppy dog way. Like there's
yeah,
this
they're
guy
all legitimately
like,
hot.
Yeah.
They are like waxed in some incredible way.
Yeah. Which we know because we got very up close and personal with.
Well, everybody was like, you thought they'd be gross to touch, but then they were kind of like very soft.
Who thought that they'd be sweat. Gross to touch?
Somebody was saying that they weren't sure if they wanted to. I won't out that person. But yeah, it's great. Everybody around it was just like a room full of women.
Yeah.
You know?
It was like, oh, here's where everybody is. Like it was like 10 different. I was telling David, like upon reflection, it was kind of like being in a big banquet hall in like Game of Thrones or something, except it was just all bridal parties and like all the different instead of all the different houses. And so it was like, here's one group with their like their queen and her veil. And here's the group where everybody's wearing like mask, like glittery masquerade masks. And everybody sort of gathered in the round around all the male strippers. It was very kind of incredible.
Yeah, you could tell who the bride would be wearing. Everybody was wearing like a slutty bride dress with like a bride sash.
Yeah.
You know, and then their bridesmaids are wearing like slutty bridesmaids dresses. And then all the brides are the people who got the like special dances because their parties told them in advance. And our party also told the show in advance. So they asked Emily if she wanted to come on stage and mm-hmm. she said yes.
Yeah. I mean, why wouldn't I?
Well, because you said you didn't want to. You thought you didn't want to at all. But then they came over. And by that point, because it was like a few numbers into the show at that point, too. You knew they were going to like take care of you and they weren't going to like.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to be a bad experience. It would be like a lovely and tender experience.
Well, also, the whole thing is so based on consent. So like they came up, this guy, like not one of the dancers, just like another guy working the show came up and like asked me, would you like to go on stage for a dance? And it was like very like gentlemanly. It was like, would you care to have this dance? And I was like, would I? Like, you know, I thought about it for a second. I was like, yeah, sure. And then the whole time is that they were like bringing me down and like prepping me for what's going to go on. Like the whole thing was very like, are you okay with this? Is this, are you going to be okay doing this and this? And it was just like so gentlemanly the entire experience. I was like,
wait, so Emily, what did they do?
So I got an aerialist.
There we go.
She got the 9-inch nails.
I got the 9-inch nails,
which was so perfect that we were all like, how did they know? She would get the industrial music aerialist.
What song?
Closer. Closer. Of course.
Oh, of course. Okay. And they made her, I didn't know. Maybe it was going to be
they
more
like
subtle.
Strapped her down to a big round leather bed in the middle of the floor. And then a guy did an aerial routine over her that she had to participate in sometimes.
Well, he's like, so it. He comes down, like he's spinning around and stuff. First of all, it just feels like a dream because you're like lying down and you just have this man like spinning above you. There's not that much contact for most of it.
No, it wasn't like you didn't get like grinded on very
much. Did he drip on you, Emily? No, I'm sorry, but was there sweat dripping on you? And it's, I know it's gross, but my face, Molly was like looking at my face. I was so horrified.
It's like, looking at your face, but I've also seen pictures of you from college.
Hey, girl.
No, there was no sweat. He was surprisingly dry. But there are these moments where he'll like, he came down and was like, okay, like grab onto my jacket and just pull. And then he would lift himself up and somehow his jacket would just like come off into my hand. So I was like, wow, I'm part of the trick.
It was like you ripped his pants off and then he would like fly away and then come back. And then at the end, he like lifted Emily onto his lap and then like they flew away together.
And there is video of this somewhere, but
God, it was the greatest
I'm
moment.
So happy that didn't stay in Vegas, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible.
Very like, you don't have to tell anyone about this, it's just for you.
But there's nothing to be embarrassed of, because all I did was just like lie there and enjoy the show.
Yeah, it was amazing. Well, it was also like I was saying, it was like the pit and the pendulum. Like part of it was like, is he gonna fall on you?
Yeah, it's suspenseful.
It's suspense.
But we left and we were just like, I think we were all just in this like crazy euphoria because it was just the most, like it was better than I think any of us could have imagined. Aside from even me going on stage, just the entire atmosphere. And
it was great. And just there were like a million women around and they were all so happy. So we were also just like, because we hadn't seen any women all weekend, we were like, yay.
Hungry for your sisters.
It's like the end of the sci-fi movie. We found like the secret part of Logan's Run.
Totally.
I think I always do a Logan's Run metaphor because it's the only metaphor. Hey guys, want to take another night call?
Yeah.
This one comes from Darcy Wilder.
Woo.
Hello, guys. It's Darcy Wilder. I saw a post on Instagram and I'm going to ask a few questions. I don't know exactly what type you're looking for, but I have a few. How come when I pour tap water into a cup, it's cloudy? Did you guys go to Chuck E. Cheese's when you were kids? And was there an animatronic band? Because I never saw one IRL and I think that would be cool. What are you guys' skincare routines? And if you have, it's an exhausting conversation. I understand if you don't want to do that. All right. I hope you guys are doing well. Very, I'm a fan. Other questions? They're all so boring. It's like, have you ever repotted a plant? Because like I need to repot a plant. Okay, bye.
I love the lightning round from Darcy. I feel like we should just like all go around and answer all four questions.
Oh yeah.
All right. Okay. Possible. Should we just start? Okay. Why is tap water cloudy when you pour it in a cup? I always thought it was because there are bubbles.
Yes, bubbles.
Because then, like, if you leave it long enough, it dissipates. But it is kind of weird.
It aerates.
Yeah. Is that does that happen in LA? Because it definitely happens everywhere in New York. But
for sure.
Also, I think the tap water in New York is better than the tap water in LA.
It is
supposedly.
It definitely is.
Maybe the cloudiness is like delicious fluoride.
The rookie move of the few people who move from LA to New York is that they have Brita pitchers, which is just like you don't need it. It's fine. Everything is okay.
Well, we don't have the fluoride also because they thought that it was going to like allow communists to put messages into your brain. Mm.
Well, to be fair, if you overdo it on the fluoride, your teeth turn brown.
Really?
Yes.
Well, so don't drink too much tap water.
Yeah, it's just if you were getting like fluoride treatments using fluoridated tap water or using fluoridated toothpaste and drinking a ton of tap water, you run the risk.
Okay.
Now, I don't remember any of the details about why we don't have fluoride in California tap water.
I thought we still did. I think we do.
We don't. We're like the only place that doesn't, I think. I'm going to find out and we'll tell you next time.
Follow up.
Question two. And I couldn't quite understand this. An animatronic ant? An animatronic... Okay, so she asked if we had gone to Chuck E. Cheese's and if we had seen an animatronic.
Because she never saw one in real life.
Ant?
But an animatronic. No, it would have been Charles.
Charles?
Entertainment Cheese. Yeah, Chuck E. Cheese. Charles Entertainment Cheese is his name. Is his real full name. But he's not animatronic. He's a man in a suit.
No, there's animatronics.
There is animatronics.
I saw the animatronics.
I was at Chuck E. Cheese.
Okay. No, that's what I was going to say. Okay. They got rid of the animatronics.
Oh.
But in the 80s, there were animatronics. So this is the true, is the millennial, old millennial divide.
But that's weird that they would have done, that now they're doing.
They got rid of them because they were like expensive to repair.
Yeah.
And they were terrifying. Yeah. Emily, did you ever see them?
I think so. I mean, this is the thing about Chuck E. Cheese's is that it was such a like event place to go to that I did not form the bond around like whatever characters they tried to sell you on at Chuck E. Cheese the same way that you do even like at McDonald's. Like I definitely remember Grimace and the Hamburglar, but I couldn't tell you. I know that there were other characters that like populated the land of Chuck E. Cheese. But I don't remember them.
It's just Chuck E. Cheese, and then he has like a band, and when it is someone's birthday, the band would like rise up on this platform.
I do remember that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, you all remember
that. Okay, now there we go.
Because you grew up in the
80s. Yep.
And then my boyfriend, who is from the South, says they didn't have Chuck E. Cheese, and instead they had Showbiz Pizza, which was like a ripoff of Chuck E. Cheese, or maybe Chuck E. Cheese ripped off Showbiz Pizza, but it was the same idea, where it's like an animatronic band like rises out. The Rockafire explosion, and then that guy made a documentary about it a little while ago, like where the guy like bought the whole band.
Whoa. We had a place locally in Tacoma, Washington, shout out anybody from Tacoma, called Pizza and Pipes, that had a live organist, like a huge organ that took up the entire room, and it was awesome. He could play, he could do any requests at all. That was where we always went after like softball games and stuff.
Oh, we always went to Shakey's. I feel like I was just
Shakey's
talking
pizza.
About this.
Yeah, we were talking about Shakey's and Vegas.
Yeah, we were talking about where you go after the like the sports tournament, the like soccer tournament trophy, where they give you the participation trophy if you're a kid who's bad at sports.
My old thing growing up was we would go to the really shitty McDonald's where the Playland.
Oh, but tell them about Stu Leonard's.
Oh, Stu Leonard's. Do you know about Stu Leonard's, Emily?
No.
Stu Leonard's, I think it actually closed, but that was like
this is like only real East Coast kids will know.
It was a destination grocery store, and I'm trying to remember if it was in like Montauk or New Jersey. It was in some like place that was a drive outside the city, and it was a grocery store with like, I mean, it was amazing. It had animatronic cows, animatronic chickens. Oh, yeah. And it was like the kind of place where you went and like the groceries all seemed really fancy and they were all like geared towards like it was like a bougie dream of like kids food. Like you would buy eggs and you'd see like the animatronic chickens as if they were like laying the eggs that you would buy.
Oh, that's so cool.
That's
nuts. And they had like a lot of samples. But it was my favorite place. And I think it closed a couple years ago, but that was another big thing of like, oh, let's take like a weekend trip to this fun grocery store.
That sounds like
but
a
it
dream.
Was fun.
No, that sounds it was great. Great. Like a themed grocery store.
It was pretty
like
awesome.
A true dream. Have you guys ever seen the Five Nights at Freddy's video game?
No.
They're making a movie of it. It was popular with kids. It's like a guy who made this video game, and it's like the only video game he made. It's like a homemade video game called Five Nights at Freddy's, and it's about you're the security guard at a pizza chain that is clearly Chuck E. Cheese's. It's called Freddy's. And it's the scariest game because the whole thing in the game is that you just have five surveillance cameras and you just click on the windows to see the different rooms of the... You see the different rooms of the pizza place other than the security room that you're in. And at a certain point in the night, the animatronics come to life and start walking towards the security room.
Oh, man.
And you have to make it through the night. So you keep like clicking on the cameras to see how close they're getting. And they just are like in these like scary positions in the scary surveillance rooms. And then they either get to you before the night is over and eat you, or you make it through the night and then you have to do it for four more nights.
That sounds horrible. And
it's great because it's like a weird, it's the weirdest gameplay. It's like so.
Do they move slowly?
Yeah, they don't. You don't see them move. You just see them when you click on the lights on. They're closer. They like pause in place. So they just. No. It's really frightening. And I think they've made like a bunch of sequels to the game that are all kind of the same, but with like more animatronics.
Oh my, wow.
But it's such a simple concept, and it's really scary. And kids love it. Like it's a thing that kids like. Which is interesting because those kids never went to Chuck E. Cheese's. So yeah, it's not exactly. based on like nostalgia because that fucking animatronic band was so scary.
They were so rickety,
you know, even though they were like theoretically top of the line, there was something so off brand and kind of like uncanny valley about it. That reminds me of the really scary show I watched on the plane to Las Vegas that was called Spy in the Wild. It was narrated by David Tennant, and it was like a BBC nature documentary, but it was about placing robot animals in animal packs to observe the animals. So they made like fake baby animals, but then they were so obviously robots. So they'd be panning across like African wolf pups, and then they get to this one wolf pup and it's a robot with a robot eye.
Oh my God.
Like a camera lens eye. And I couldn't get through it because it was so... It triggered some uncanny valley.
Were the other animals just like, nope?
No, the other animals like accepted it as they were like, they just think it's one of them. And you were like, nobody thinks it's one of them. There was one where it was like a crocodile, like picking up all the crocodile picks up all its babies in its mouth to carry them to like the water. And it just kind of sees the robot one. And it's like, oh, whatever. Like crunch.
Oh my God.
I'll take you. But it was sorry.
we should move on to Darcy's last couple questions. Skincare routines. I do actually plead that that's too exhausting for me to get into. And I also don't want to run the risk of like plugging. Hey, if anybody wants us to recommend their skincare line, just send me the free stuff.
Yeah. Here's all I'll ask is how many steps?
One, two... Three. Nothing okay. crazy.
That's not that many. Yeah. How about you, Tess?
I'm at two.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you?
I'm probably at two. I can't get with the 10 step. That's too many steps.
I can't. But I do have to say that occasionally I add a mask, so then I'm bordering on three.
Yeah.
Hey, Tess, you will know the answer to the repotting of plants.
Oh, I fucking love plants. It's crazy how much. Recently, I've loved plants even more because I realized that... those like figs that are in every like interiors magazine and stuff, and they're described as looking like babies. They have the broad, rounded leaves, and they're a kind of fig, but they don't bear fruit. But you can take one of the leaves off those things, put it in a glass of water, and give it like it takes a long time, like 6 to 8 weeks, and then as soon as it will sprout roots, and then you can repot it. But those plants are expensive. And they're beautiful. And so I just did that. But repotting
Tess
plants.
Tess just learned about taking clippings and making plants.
Well, I'd done it for a while, but I'd never done it. Like, I hadn't done it with green onions, and I didn't know that you could do it with trees.
I didn't have any. I tried to do it with green onions recently, and I couldn't get it to work. I don't know what
you
the deal
make,
was, but...
I put mine getting northeast light, and I found that helped. Right. No, but it's for real, because with orchids, too, you need to get the north or the east light, I think. That's the only way
Such
I can make
Capricorn.
Mine grow.
Capricorn.
Wow. I know. I was literally getting the southwest light, so this explains everything.
Hey, great question, Darcy.
Yeah.
Great series of questions, Darcy.
Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, Darcy, come on night call.
Yeah, Darcy, come on night call. So, guys, I don't know about you, but I am deleting my Facebook.
Yeah, I haven't been signed in for a while, but I was very impressed that you were actually deleting it.
Yeah.
Tess, what's your status?
Dude, I don't care. I mean, honestly, I'm sorry. Like, I believe that all of these... So we're bringing this up because of the data breach.
Yeah.
Well, which, to be technically clear, is not a breach, but only because Facebook's security with information is, like, so lax and terrible that it didn't, like, qualify as a breach for them. Because, like... You can find out so much about people on Facebook without technically violating any of their security rules.
Right.
So there's that. But yeah, go ahead though. This breach, the Cambridge Analytica story that came out in The Guardian and The New York Times.
And that data was used by the Mercer and Bannon think tank, right?
Mm-hmm.
That then yeah, like they used gave, it for nefarious purposes.
Well, they also like they
did it through a quiz.
They did it through a quiz and they gave it like an Anglo, you know, tell there for white nationalists. They gave it like a real Anglophone name that mm-hmm. would make idiots be like, oh, a trusted source, right. The Cambridge Analytica.
I've heard of Cambridge.
But I think what it really comes down to with all this stuff that, you know, in terms of the legality of it is so hazy because it's so new. The idea that we've like let all this stuff happen and now we have to roll it back and regulate it seems like pretty hard to do, like kind of like spilled it all over the floor already.
I mean, I think the thing that's so insane that was only like banned from Facebook as of like 2015 was that when, you know, you sign up for some app or service or something that uses your Facebook profile and then they ask, you know, can we look at your friends list or your information on your about you or your likes and all that stuff. And for a very, very long time, like it was totally fair game to use, like have in among those permissions be to like look at the profiles of your friends. So like even right. if you personally were not going to give permission to an app to, you know, look at your information, one of any of your friends could do that. And then it like, who cares? Like you're still being used for that purpose. I mean, I don't know. I kind of early on have had a policy. I do not like things on Facebook. So I try to like make it very hard for it to know how to target me because I just don't have any right. likes.
I know people who like everything so that they get like the weirdest mix possible of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm a big liker.
Yeah. They like to like stuff that they don't like in order to see what like someone else might get from their feed. So they get all this weird like alt-right meme stuff because they want to see what those people's feeds look like.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, okay, so that's what the deal is with this stuff is, you know, did it influence the election? And my feeling about it is like, there's this group of people that are like still looking for this authoritarian out from the reality that we live in now.
Yeah.
You know, right. who are like, Mueller's going to fix it, or like, we're going to sue Facebook and that's going to fix it. You know, like, we're going to put the genie back in the bottle, which is just like, no, we clearly can't do that. And if these people were making memes and fake accounts and all this shit, all this like cyber, you know, seeding stuff that they were definitely doing. But they were stoking, you know, you can't stoke racism that isn't already there.
That's, yeah.
You know, like America was having already like a crisis of escalating police violence that like was an easy thing for people to prey on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But a lot of that is also the thing we always talk about, like, you know, the like make Nazis scared again. Like I think a lot of that meme stuff can make people feel the permission to like exercise and bully like people that they wouldn't normally feel like because they would feel more alone in their beliefs. And then you like see enough memes on the internet and you're like, hey, more people think the way I do. And I think that
right.
gives you much more of a like pass.
Well, these people found their community. I mean, like Jake Hang was tweeting about this today. What up, Jake Hang? Come on, Nightcall.
Hi.
and he was saying too that, yeah, it's like this is a place for alienated white men on the internet. They, you know, they knew that there were all these white men who felt forgotten or whatever, young and old, who were like, the world is changing in ways that don't benefit me, and that they could find like a community online of people that were like, fuck everyone else except us, like, let's torture them all.
Yeah.
And you know, you were saying also that like 4chan in Japan also turned into like a nationalist,
oh yeah, like long ago,
you know.
Yeah.
Right, which is also, like, again, kind of off last week's episode. Like, that's not what we thought the internet was going to do.
Right. Well, I think...
And when you...
Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Well, I think the thing that's, like, also, like, more of a macro thing in looking at the story is just how it only took one eight-year cycle to go from, like, wow, the first presidency that was won with Facebook to, like, oh, God, the second presidency that was won with Facebook. It's just, like, because there was so much optimism about... And, like, this has also been brought up, too. Like, the Obama campaign used a lot of like, you know, information collecting apps, but there was much more transparency with those, and it was like direct, like you were giving,
yeah, and like what is that Shepherd Fairy poster if not like a meme?
Totally, right? Yeah, it's just like there is a way for all of these, you know, supposedly good and powerful currents to be used for ill.
Well, if it's powerful, it can be used in both directions.
Yeah.
That seems yeah. really obvious.
Yeah. I also find the political discourse on Facebook is, it's it seems as though people like lead with their pain a lot in a way that they don't on Twitter and Instagram. And I'm guessing that's because it's older people. But I think that
it's just like more text-based. It's like a good place for like a long rant.
I mean, well, it's also family members are often like the disagreements that I see on Facebook are often between family members, like, you know, a younger person and then maybe an aunt or an uncle or, you know, grandparent or whatever. And I think it's given me, I mean, granted, like I'm among the people who are not big fans of news outlets giving a voice to the same conservative people over and over to make the same conservative points about why they voted for Donald Trump. I wanted to listen the first time and then did not anymore.
Well, it started to be like, the same story over and over and over again.
Exactly. I like watching the debate, though, between those people, because I do feel like I get very isolated and indignant in my opinion, and seeing kind of like, you know, being a voyeur in other people's politically based family dramas gives me a really, I feel like it's a healthier insight into how people are negotiating their politics now. And like, if they can find a middle ground, which often they can't.
It's like a civil war thing. Exactly. Where you have like families divided by that stuff.
And
like,
and you don't see on Twitter. I mean, I feel like you're getting a younger demographic that's mostly interacting among people who don't know each other, or they know each other from work. Like they're both political writers or, you know, working in the same field and they're having an argument, but you don't often see people online having these fights amongst themselves that really kind of could be had on the phone, but for some reason they're happening on someone's wall. Well, and I think it's fascinating.
Well, I think the thing you said about people coming on Facebook and leading with their pain is like so true. And like, even outside of the context of a political campaign or like an election season, like when I was, so I'm deleting everything and I'm kind of going back and looking at, because I archived everything just for my own personal information, and just like realizing how the most active I ever was on Facebook, and I was never like super active on it, but was definitely when I was like the most, like having the most problems and was like the saddest and wanted to go on and just like demonstrate my sadness to like all my friends, which I'm sure was super fun for all of them. But
did it help? I mean, did you find it therapeutic?
No, I always felt
it was
really
new. It was like a new way to do that. Yeah. And I think everybody of our generation that was like the inner, you know, the pioneers of using social media and getting it right when it first started, you know, that we've all gone through this cycle of being like, yeah, my parents thought it was scary to like talk to people on the internet, but like we're beyond that now.
Yeah.
And but again, I think there's just like all these ways in which it does overlap with real life that we're still coming to terms with. Yeah. And this is a big one of them, is like, hey, something that happened on the internet totally influenced things that happened in real life. So it's not just this like repository where you put all your like dark energy.
No, it's,
and you know, attention seeking, it like can have real life consequences.
Yeah, there's no, it's like, yeah, there's no divider anymore between like your IM chats and seeing people.
I have to say too, in other defenses of Facebook, which I totally agree needs to be held accountable for the data. I mean, the data breach is terrible, and I think it does need to be held accountable, but I can't ditch my account also because I've been playing Scrabble on that thing for 13 years.
But that Scrabble app has no doubt been like scraping your information.
You know what's awesome? Oh, yeah. It's like it can actual
have it.
Scrabble.
It can have it all. No, I have. But I play the same three. I've been playing the same three people who are friends from college. And I've been playing them for so long. And it's like I just can't cut that cord. And then the other thing is like, I have to say, I have a secret mom's group on Facebook that I can't
divorce
myself from.
People participate in communities on Facebook. I mean, that's my feeling too, though, is like they're all evil. There's a lot of other evil companies that we're all like entangled with.
For sure. Ralph's Club.
And, you know, but quitting one won't.
Facebook, though, has not, like, and it's easier for me to quit than I think for a lot of other people, but Facebook does have the way, like it can have multiple tentacles around different portions of your life.
I just feel, and I feel like with this story specifically, what I'm afraid of happening with people rallying around it with like the neoliberal take on it is like, we'll send Mark Zuckerberg to jail and then everything will be fine.
I don't
fine,
think that's,
you know,
what the idea is. I think it's like we need to have a lot more regulation over this tool that everybody
that
is in everybody's life.
How? Why didn't we talk about that like when we started?
Well, because everybody was just so like, when there's a Democrat in the presidency, then we're all like, oh, all of the big businesses are good and fine and they're like working in our favor. Like that was how we were operating for years.
But that was never true. Yeah.
I mean, and now we kind of have the wool pulled from our eyes. in a way, and we realize, oh no, they were always just working in their own interests, and yeah.
Well, I mean, we all saw The Social Network. Like, all those guys are evil.
Yeah, but like, you know? But they were played by Justin Timberlake, so it was fun.
Well, I mean, I think also, like, there is a thing about movies like The Social Network and Wall Street and Wolf of Wall Street that enforce this idea that, like, you have to be ruthless, you have to be an evil, unempathetic person to succeed. And I don't think that's true. I think we should, especially given, you know, the political climate now, I think we're all seeing, like, oh, maybe actually, like, letting narcissistic sociopaths, like, rise to the top of every field is, like, a terrible idea.
Well, once we can legislate and that, we'll be on a really good path when we can ban assholes. Well, we should probably call it a show. This has been a long
call
one.
Call it a night.
Packed with, yeah, call it a night.
Guys, I'm trying to start a new end of our show sign off.
Let's call it a night.
Let's call it a night.
Let's hit the road, girls, and call it a night.
I love it.
Gotta go back to Las Vegas.
Yeah. Thank you all for listening. As always, you can leave us a night call at 1240469 or an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to us if you haven't already. I don't know what you're waiting for, but you definitely should. And leave us a rating and a review. We would really appreciate it. You can also follow us on Twitter at nightcallpod and on Facebook at nightcallpodcast if you are still on Facebook by the time you're listening to this. And yeah, thank you for listening.
Hey, what about the Instagram?
Oh, and the Instagram. Can't forget the Instagram.
Not to reveal who runs the account.
Oh, so I should say that. Thank you to the night caller who wrote in that you had figured out which of us ran each social media account.
We're going to switch at some point, yeah. Just to confuse you.
We'll swap out.
It's a cup game.
It is Night Call Podcast on Instagram. Also owned by Mark Zuckerberg, but who cares? Who's keeping track, really?
Who's keeping score?
All right, we'll see everybody next week. It's been Night Call.
Bye.